Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gammel from Chris Gammel's Analog Life.
How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well, Dave.
Excellent. What's happening up in Cleveland, Ohio?
You know, my basement's getting more unbearable to be in. It's a little cold in here.
right. Okay. It's going into winter over there, isn't
it? Yeah. Yeah.
It's just coming into summer here, so I'm sitting here in shorts and a t-shirt.
Yes. Yep. I'm jealous.
Yeah, we've still got the crazy time difference, though.
It just
keeps spreading apart.
Yeah.
I guess we've got another, how long does daylight saving go? 4 months or something? I don't know. Something
maybe
like
March,
that. Anyway, it's a pain in the butt. It's not as convenient as it was when we first started the show, that's for sure. Ah, well, what can you do?
Come home early from work.
Exactly, and me leave late for work. So
there you go,
that's pretty much what we do. Yeah, Chris leaves early, I leave late. Yeah. Not to worry.
It's worth it for all our listeners.
Absolutely. Or 1,000 of them or something like that, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. It's really great. So, shout-outs. Let's get started.
Shout-outs. We usually start with shout-outs.
Yeah. I just saw on Adafruit today. They mentioned your review, and that was the reason, the fact that the X-Tech won the multimeter shootout, and that's why they're carrying
it. Yes, EV-Blog. Yeah, that's right. And they've been using it for years as well, I think. So, it's one of their favorite meters, and it's cheap. It's only $50 or $45.
Oh, really?
I don't know how much they're selling it for or something, but it won the $50 shootout, so I'm not sure.
Oh, it's a $50. Okay.
Yeah, it's a $50 meter. So, yeah, it's a really good entry-level meter if you're into that sort of thing. You know, it won't have all the bells and whistles, but it'll certainly get the job done. It's as good as a first starter meter or a second spare meter, because as I've always said on the blog many times, you need at least two multimeters. Mm-hmm. If you don't have two multimeters in your lab, you're not really in the game. So, you've got to measure voltage and current at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
Often. So, yeah. If you don't have 2 meters, in fact, I've shown on the blog, I've actually demonstrated where you need 4 multimeters. If you're measuring the input power and the output power of some sort of system, like a DC to DC converter, you've got to have 4 multimeters because you have to measure those things at the same time. You can do it with 2, but it's a real pain. So, reason to buy more gear.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure Adafruit loves to hear that too. As does X-Tech.
Right. So they have to give a discount. They should have a 4 discount. So if you buy 4, you get, if you buy 3, you get your 4th one free or something.
There you go.
Like
that's the way to do it. Yeah.
Come on, Adafruit.
I saw you listed on the X-Tech site too. They listed you like under the awards. They listed the winning the shootout on there.
Oh, yeah, they were. Apparently a cheer went up around the office when they won the $50 shootout. They were very excited by it, and they told me all about it. This whole blurb, they've set up a whole page on their website devoted to the thing. You can clip. Yeah, but I guess, companies get excited when they win something. So even if it is a lame-ass EEV blog award,
You should do a contest. Who can ship me the most expensive gear the fastest?
Right.
And no charge, of course. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And you get to keep it.
Of course. Yeah.
Of course. Well, not all my stuff I get to review, I keep. So there you go.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's
I'm going to ship some of it back. Some of it, I wouldn't want to keep that anyway. But other stuff, I really want to keep that.
Yeah.
well, what can you do?
Right. What about the... You guys don't have NPR there, do you?
NPR, no, we don't.
No?
No.
Do you know what it is here?
No. Tell us all about it.
NPR is just National Public Radio. It's like, I think it was started, mostly privately funded. There's some government funding through like public broadcasting stuff, but it's basically just like public radio, kind of like, like BBC News, like how they have radio programs too, but also there's a lot of other programming too. And I'm a really big fan of it. But they had a piece on Hackerspaces, so they were interviewing Mitch Haltman, and so that was another shout-out for this week to NPR and kind of just highlighting Hackerspaces. I thought that was pretty cool, and saw it all over Twitter, too. So
Now that I know what NPR is, we do have something similar here. I don't listen to it. There is a government sponsored radio station, which just has basically news and they interview people exactly like this. You know, they might get somebody obscure from a museum on to talk about, I don't know, their work at the museum or something like that.
Yeah.
So, and I think there might even be some privately run channels somewhere. I don't know. Don't quote me on that, but I'm sure we have something similar. So,
Yeah, a lot of the programming in the US is pretty great, so I like it a lot.
Excellent. I love all those private channels. For the first time here in Sydney, we've got our own private TV station. It's actually privately run here in Sydney, and it's just dedicated to local material. They can't always get just local material, but they can get material. You guys have had that for decades over in the US. You get those. You can even set up your own TV cable network, can't you? Your own TV cable show or something?
Not sure. In some states, they are private.
Right,
you mean like local access kind of things? You mean like
local access? Because I hear about all these people in their shed just setting up their own cable TV
like Wayne's
channel
World
or something. Like, oh, right. Is that how Wayne's World started out? Was it?
That started out as a Saturday Night Live skit. But I mean, that was the idea that those guys were in their parents' basement recording that show. Yeah. But yeah, that's the idea.
I've watched that for decades.
Yeah, local access is usually kind of it's kind of fallen on. I mean, like you'll have like local government stuff here too, but usually kind of boring around here. So maybe it's better over there. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's a pretty good channel here. If you tune into the radio, they've always got something good on, interesting, rather than just some stupid talkback radio host who's talking about bloody Paris Hilton or some shit like that.
Oh,
yeah, it's garbage. So it's always much better than that. So it's usually all talk. They usually don't have much in the way of music and stuff like that. It's usually just talkback and interviews and stuff like that. So which is really good.
That's cool. That's really cool.
Excellent. And you wanted to shout out to All About Circuits Forum. Yeah.
Do you ever go on there at all?
I've seen it. I'm not a member. No, sorry. I'm already a member of too many forums I try and keep up to. And, you know, I run my own electronics forum. So they're competitions. So. And
yeah,
they're doing pretty well.
Yeah, they have a ton of members. So that's kind of the thing I like about it. But also the standard side of their site is like a open source textbook on electronics too. It's actually very
I've seen
good.
That. Yeah,
group edited and everything. So just in case people didn't know about it, I mean, I don't know. We've been kind of looking for. We don't really have anything for us, but EEV blog forums helps us out a lot and has a place to talk about the amp hour. So that's really nice. But you know, just in terms of always looking for more places to ask questions or find answers kind of thing. It's got a ton of people on there, so that's pretty cool in terms of their critical mass there.
Yeah, that's amazing. They're about 10 times the size of mine, because I've got there's about 10,000 posts in the general forum on mine, but they've got like 100,000. So, I don't know how long it's been going for, but they've certainly built up a great forum.
Yeah, and the nice thing too, I mean, like kind of like with your blog, how they can just point, like for yours, they can just point to the video, oh, Dave did a video of that, in 99 or whatever. And,
99?
No, sorry, like video 99, not 1999.
Oh, right, okay, right. Haven't been doing it that long.
Right, yeah, so they'll just point over to like the textbook, though. So someone asks like a basic question, it's like, oh, it's okay to ask this question, but make sure you read the textbook first, and that's cool. Mm. So if people haven't heard of it, check it out. I like it.
Yep, absolutely. All these forums are great. I mean, when I was a boy, we've always got to have a when I was a boy.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There was only the Usenet news groups, Oz Electronics, Sci Electronics Design, and, I've been a member of those for, since the 90s or something, and they just died. I don't read those anymore. All of those crappy Usenet, because they just get filled with spam these days.
Oh, really?
They're just full of spam, and it's just dying out. It's really only the diehards left, and people just bitch all the time, it's just...
It's a really old cantankerous people still on there.
Absolutely. People are, I've been doing it since it was a bulletin board for 30 years ago or something. Yeah. Because that's where a lot of them spawn from. A lot of the same people have been on that forum for 20 years or something like that before the internet before, you know, back on bulletin board systems where it started or something like that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah
that's well, crazy. Before the web. Anyway, I'm not sorry, I'm saying before the internet because the internet's older than the web. So,
oh, right, good point. Yeah. That's crazy.
But yeah, and it's a bit sad that they're dying off, but the interface kind of sucks. I much prefer these forums, these BBS style forums, which are much more friendly. You can have threads and
even mailing lists are kind of getting to me. You know, like you know, sometimes you get like those daily digests and everything. And say, I don't need that.
The old Yahoo groups. I set up the Oz Electronics Yahoo group back in.
Yeah.
Oh god, I haven't even visited that for I don't know 5 years probably, and occasionally someone will still join, and I'm going, why? There's no activity,
What are you doing?
Actually, I'm thinking about shutting it down. Actually, having a note on there saying no, please go to the EEV blog forum. And,
yeah, just anything, you know, anything else, please.
those Yahoo forums. I'm still a member of one which has a community here in. Yeah. In Australia, but the interface sucks.
Yeah.
It's just terrible. So, what can you do? It's hard to convince people because I've tried to convince people on that forum to go to move to a BBS style forum. I've even set it up for them. Look, here it is. Go here. But nobody goes there. Everyone's happy with their mailing list. No one likes to change. And,
people hate change.
It's... Yeah, I know.
Well, speaking Same of here. That, see, I know, right? So, speaking of that,
exactly.
I had been talking with some people on Twitter about this, about buying a fab and fixing it up for all those people that don't want to change from their old processors and their old chips and stuff.
Yeah.
And have you ever looked at that or heard about that at all?
I've heard about that. Yeah, there's companies that specialize in making these old obsolete chips to actually keep them going. And they charge an arm and a leg for them, of course.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So like Rochester's one and Lansdale's another one someone told me about. But I was looking for, because I'm working on a design right now to fix up an old board. And I was looking at the chip. I was looking for a data sheet, and it popped up somewhere. And I think it was on TI site, actually. And they actually said, oh, we have stock of this. And this is like a programmable part from, 30 years ago.
Wow.
So, yeah, like 20, 30 years ago. Probably, 30 years ago almost. And it cost $50. And I'm like, oh my God, why? I mean, and the thing is, and a lot, at least in the US, I'm not sure about in Australia. I mean, like the military, they have huge timelines where they need guaranteed parts for, 20, 30 years. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I've worked on those military projects. And yes, it's a very serious issue. You have to support that device for 20 or 30 years. In fact, at the military companies I've worked at, they have what's called a component obsolescence engineer. And that is actually a full-time job. And they might have multiple people. Your full-time job is to find actual replacements for all these obsolete parts. Find out, you might have to, okay, you can't physically get the chip anymore, but you might be able to make some sort of plug-in board which replaces it and goes into the dip socket that it replaced. And
basically that's what I do. Crazy. I mean, to be honest. Yep. So, that's kind of what I do.
That's a pretty big business. And you said like the chip is like, it costs about $50. That's pretty cheap, actually. If you can get... because it's not like you're making 100,000 of these things anymore. Hey, looks like we have a caller. I'm not sure if you can hear that, but the phone's ringing.
It sounds like an alien. I got to say, it sounds like a UFO's coming down.
Should I answer it?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I won't.
So I was talking about, you wonder about it, though, because, you hear about all these fabs going out of business. And if it's a smaller fab, maybe, that's how a lot of these guys started up, like the Rochesters and everything.
Yeah.
They obviously have tons of talent on hand because they can replicate old processes and old, old designs and stuff. So they're obviously good at something, they're good at a lot of things. But you wonder about if you bought a fab and you started doing that, could you find enough business to make it a viable option, kind of like a boutique shop?
I don't know. It's a very niche market. I certainly wouldn't like to try.
Right. That's it'd be cool, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, you've got to charge, $50, $100, $200 a chip to try and recoup all those costs you put in. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
The tough part would be matching the behavior exactly, right? So you could probably move it to, we talked on here before about like MOSIS and doing your own development, trying to move the functionality. You could try and move the functionality like a newer process, which would make sense. But then you have to try and match timing and all that other crap that, capacitance on pins would start to, you'd have to match everything perfectly, or else you know something's going to mess up in whatever you put the chip into. Yeah, so so you don't think it's possible, though, to...
I certainly wouldn't. It's everything's possible, but geez, your odds are not good. I certainly wouldn't start up a new one, sort of replacing old chips. Very niche market. No, I wouldn't.
You probably got a lot of pissed off customers too.
Yeah, wouldn't touch it. That's why there's what only two or three companies out there who actually do it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, so, I've looked at them before because I've had things where I've needed that kind of service, and then I look at the price and I'm like. Thanks, but no thanks, guys. You wonder about it though with like dip parts, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, hobbyist market isn't a big enough chunk probably, but you know, they're just they're going so far away. Either it's gonna move towards like how Nathan Seidel said in that talk you posted too, that we talked about that last week about how they do a lot of breakout boards and that's like one of their big things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe that'll just be the new standard. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you've always got to plug into breadboards. So those sort of breakout boards where you convert surface mount into dip packages, they're easy and cheap to do. It just needs someone to do it.
Yeah.
In fact, I thought about doing this probably 5 years ago, actually laying out and having these little boards, these little breakout boards for all the different packages on the market.
Yeah.
And I just didn't get off my ass and do it, and there's a lot of people out there who actually specialize in this. So now you can buy these boards. You can buy them in a panel. Like, you can buy a whole panel worth, and they've got all the different footprints on there.
Oh,
and
cool.
You just snap them off, and you solder on the header pins, and you solder your part on top, and it converts SMD into dip.
That's great.
You can buy one of these panels for, $20, $30 or something.
Yeah.
So you have one of those on hand, and you can basically put any chip you like onto your board.
That's cool.
Onto a dip, convert it into dip. But
there's
other things. I'm sure I could. I'm sure I can find them. You can buy them at your local JCAR store. JCAR do or used to sell them or something like that, these breakout boards, and they're quite good. But, of course, one of the things you've got to watch out for is the lead inductance, because these surface mount packages are small for a reason, not only for, in the compact devices these days, but lead inductance is smaller. So if you just put the chip on a board and then spread it out to some big 40-pin dip chip that you can plug into your board and you don't put bypass caps on the board as well, then you can be screwed. So if you're just breaking out the chip...
Or if you're pumping a lot of current through it, then you get the...
Or if you're pumping current,
LDIDT, and you get voltage spikes and...
Yeah,
that's a mess.
It's not good. So you got to have local bypassing on the board. So it's not like you can just whack the chip on there.
Yeah.
You've got to actually at least put a bypass cap a lot of chips these days have, different rails. They have multiple rails. So you've got to put multiple bypass caps. You might even put a local voltage regulator on there so that if it's a part that only works at 1.8 volts or something for some reason, then you put a voltage regulator on there and it can work from anywhere from 3.3 or 5 or something like that.
Yeah.
So, these boards have a fair bit more to do than just actually converting the pin footprints.
Yeah, that sounds like a mess. That's the same kind of stuff I'm dealing with right now. Like even level translators I'm doing. It stinks.
Yep. Yeah.
I don't like it. What was JCAR you mentioned? What is that?
JCAR is a local retail electronics store here in Australia. They've got they're the biggest. They've probably got 100 stores or something like that. And they sell parts. They still sell parts. They've been going for 30 years at least, I think. And they started out as one little shop somewhere and they've spread. Yeah, so you can still go down there and buy your parts. It's like the equivalent of Tandy in the US. It's not called Tandy in the US, is it?
Radio Shack, maybe?
Radio Shack. They're Radio Shack in the US. I guess it's equivalent to that. But a lot of people say Radio Shack's gone down the shithole.
They are, They're trash. They'll sell you five resistors for 99 cents. It's like,
right?
You get away from me.
They've always done that. They've always in there.
Five.
I remember when.
No.
Yes, when I was a kid, I'm telling you, 30 years ago, I'm not kidding, 30 years ago, I walked into my Tandy / Radio Shack store, and I bought my five resistors in the blister pack.
Yeah.
They have it in those little bubble packs, five resistors for a dollar or whatever.
That's ridiculous.
And that's where you would. They still do it.
Talk about nickel and diming people. Holy crap.
Oh, yeah, I know. But that was their business. Because a lot of people, they might only they might only make one of something. Yeah, so you don't want to buy 500 resistors.
Yeah,
you
know, I also don't want to buy five resistors for a dollar. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's why other stores existed. You know, here in Australia, it was J-Car, Dick Smith, and places like that where you could go in, you could buy bulk parts.
Really?
You know, you didn't... Yeah, yeah. You See, can, I, yeah, they have big drawers, and you could just, you know, oh, yeah, I want 100 of those and 50 of those. And
see, that sounds like almost like a hardware store then.
It's almost like a hardware store for, yeah. So J-Car is basically that here. It's a local store, and I hate it. On the local electronics forums here on Usenet and stuff like that, everyone keeps bitching about how J-Car's not like it used to be. They're saying, oh, it's not like the old days where you could go in and you could buy parts. It's bullshit. If you read the latest catalog, it's like 400 pages or something, and it's got more parts and SMD parts. It's got more parts than they ever have. So all these people crapping on about the old days and how good it was. Ah, give
Sounds
me a
like
break.
You.
Yeah. It does sound like me, but at least I'm practical enough to realize that they've got more parts than they ever have.
Yeah.
Because the reason they complain is you go in there and half the shop is these farting novelty gadgets.
Oh.
Right? So see, that's the problem. Yeah.
That's the direction Radio Shack took. They do cell phones now and cheap crappy
Absolutely.
Toys. Yeah.
Yep. That's exactly what J-Car... But J-Car don't go into the consumer side, so you can't go in there and buy a cell phone or a TV or something like that.
Okay.
But J-Car, you go in there and it's all farting novelty toys, flashing LED lights and all that sort of... But they explain in the latest catalogue or last year's catalogue why they do that. It's because
so they
have to pay the bills.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, so they can stay alive. And they're basically telling people, look, if you want us to keep selling you parts, let us sell... Half the shop has farting novelty gadgets. We're sorry, but that... actually does keep us in business. So
yeah and hopefully people that go in to buy those farty novelty gadgets, if you as you call them, hopefully they, you know, eventually get interested in electronics.
They get interested in electronics, and I'm in there, you know, a fair bit. If I just need to buy one or two parts, I'm desperate. I'll go to them occasionally if I'm driving past, and you'll get people in there, oh, how do I build something to charge my mobile phone, or, you know, out in the bush, or, you know, some other weird thing. And they're, you know, so they want to build up these little simple circuits, and they don't know how. So they go in there and they ask advice. And that's the other thing. Their other complaint is that people in J-Car and other electronic stores aren't like they used to be. They used to be hobbyists. So you go in there and you could actually ask some questions and they would know stuff.
Yeah.
But these days, no, they're just, you know, pimple-faced kids who don't know
shit.
Well, the
hobbyists probably got older.
That's the majority.
Yeah, the hobbyists probably got older, got jobs, and, you know, the younger hobbyists didn't fill in.
I won't say it's everyone in the store, because it's not. They do have some quite good hobbyists in there. So
interesting.
Yeah. Actually, I've got a very good friend of mine who I published a design with in Electronics Australia way back in the old days, and he works at J-Car. So,
oh, cool.
Yep.
Well, that was...
Yeah, so not everyone's a dumbass in J-Car, that's for sure.
That's really... I mean, like, I'm trying to think if there's stuff around here. I know there's some surplus stores, but...
Right.
I don't know if there's, like, a place you can just go and buy parts like that. I mean, like, unless you go
really?
To...
Really?
Just... Yeah, I mean...
Well, there's Fry's. It's basically the same as Fry's,
Fry's
really.
Fry's isn't in Ohio. It's not in Ohio.
Oh, well, okay, right.
Right. Yeah, and that's actually... I was reading about Fry's. They helped start, like, the Silicon Valley Revolution kind of stuff, too. I mean, like, when the...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I never realized that. I was reading an interview with the owner, because it's still family-owned.
Right.
But that's... Yeah, I don't think... Maybe it's just Ohio. I don't know. We don't have anything around here like that.
Have you actually been into a Fry's?
Yeah, when I used to live in Austin, they had one down there, and that was mad. I only went in, like, once or twice.
Yeah.
But it was...
It's insanely huge. Yeah. I've been into them. And they're themed. Like, I went into two of them. One was like an underwater Nemo...
Really?
You know, Captain's Nemo, bottom of the sea. Yeah, because all the stores are themed. Well, I think most of them are.
Huh.
And they're just absolutely enormous. And they've got giant underwater fish tanks and, you know, to make you feel like you're under the sea and all that sort of stuff. And
but they
still carry all the parts, but, like... 90% of the store is just all consumer computers, and they even have washing machines and white goods, I think. So, yeah, I don't know. It's one of those. It's one of those things. But J-Car here in Australia still sell parts. Altronics here in Australia still sell parts like that. You can walk in off the street, and they're beautifully stocked. So, Altronics only have like four stores. They've only got one store here in Sydney, and like four stores all over Australia. Whereas J-Car's huge. They've got Like, yeah, they're so big they even now sponsor the local team. They sponsor a football team here in Sydney. So they're,
oh wow,
you know, yeah. And the owner, Gary Johnson, he flies like an F4 fighter jet or something. He owns an F4 fighter jet and a Ferrari, and you know, he's quite a rich man. And yes, owns a football team. And
just to clarify, when we say football, you mean soccer, right?
No, football is in league, which is rugby league. It's a football that looks the same as your guys' football. Okay. It's no, we don't call football soccer. We call it soccer here. We call soccer here.
You do.
Whereas
okay.
in Europe, it's called football.
Football.
No.
But you guys play Aussie rules football, right?
There's Aussie rules football and there's league as well, what's called league. And it's basically a really tough version of your football over there, but we don't wear pads and all that sort of stuff. They just slam into each other and they don't. Yeah.
Got it. Well, yep. Speaking of the where to buy electronics stuff, I had a thing. I'm looking for stuff right now. I'm looking for gear for my lab. I didn't know about like just online places even, because you know when you think about like Sydney versus, I mean Cleveland's not a big city compared to like, you know, like Sydney is the equivalent of like New York or San Francisco in terms of you know, Australia. But like do you ever do online stuff at all or no?
I buy everything online. I hate walking into a shop and talking to a human. Absolutely. I just sit in my cubicle and I order stuff and it turns up. It's just so convenient. I don't know. The humble retail store is just, it's eventually going to go out of existence, I think.
Yeah, it's just surprising.
There's so much more selection online. It's cheaper and you can get it delivered. Why would you have to drive somewhere, get out of your car, go inside and,
same day kind of stuff. I mean, you can get same day some places, but, what are some of the places you do online though? Because I'm looking for a list, basically. That's what I'm looking for, and I have some
anywhere
on here.
I just do eBay. If I'm searching for something, probably the first place I might go is eBay. Then might use, Google. And, I'll just Google the damn thing. And there's all these price comparison websites. I'm sure they got them in the US, but in Australia you can – Google does it. It used to be called Google Shopping or something, right?
Yeah.
I think they've changed the name. But, yeah, we've got similar local ones here. And, you just type in your product and it searches all these, 20 different online stores and finds you the cheapest one that has stock. So
you don't even care where you go then?
I don't even care where I go. I literally, I don't go back to the same place.
Oh, okay. I was looking for ones because I was, I wanted to find, because sometimes, you don't know exactly what you want. Do you know what I mean? Do you ever have Maybe you don't. Maybe because you've been around longer.
Well, you want to browse around. I do that on eBay. I'll browse the test equipment. This is before I started the blog, and now I've got more. Now I've got test equipment coming out my asshole now. So, but I used to buy and sell test equipment on eBay all the time just because I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So I've owned 100 multimeters over the time. I'd just buy them and sell them on eBay. Yeah. I'd buy them, do them up, play with them, and sell them. And
yeah, that's like that one you had there about the guy from the forum that bought one for $500, right?
Oh, that's right. Let's talk about that. Yeah. He, where is it in the list here? He got a Tektronix. Let me find. I'll actually get the details. It'll be much more interesting if I have the I have the details. Here it is. He scored a 300 megahertz Tektronix DPO 4034 4-channel scope with probes and a Fluke 87 for $500 on that Craigslist website, which is not here in Australia. We have Craigslist, but it's not a big deal. I think it's big in the US.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah,
huge, right? Yeah.
Especially in the Bay Area.
So he didn't buy it on eBay. Yeah. And basically, he bought it and he was showing it off on the forum. Look what I got, and everyone's just their jaws dropping. This thing, it's a $10,000 scope. It's still a current model.
Wow.
And I said straight away, look, you could get $6,000 or $7,000 for that on eBay. Sell it. You're a fool if you don't sell it. And I put up a poll there. I haven't seen what the latest results are, but I think it was about 50-50. Half the people said sell it. other half said, you know, keep it for bragging rights and stuff like that.
Bragging rights, yeah. Who needs bragging? I mean, it's just if you need the capability. If you don't need the capability, then definitely get rid of it, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I demonstrated that he could sell it for $6,000 or $7,000, and he could get an almost equivalent functionality Agilent scope. In fact, a 500 megahertz Agilent scope with similar sort of sample rate and performance secondhand on eBay for $4,000 or something. So he could pocket, he could get the same performance scope or better, yet he could pocket $3,000 or $4,000. So it's a no-brainer, I think. But
that is a nice-looking scope. I'm looking at pictures of it right now.
Yeah, it's pretty pornographic. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
But really, yeah, what do you need that performance for? I would certainly sell it.
Right. Unless you're working up near the 300 megahertz range. I mean, like, unless you need that kind of high-end stuff and you need all four channels all at the same time. And even that might be kind of questionable. It's like, really? What are you really buying? What are you really using it for, you know?
Exactly. And it's got like 10 meg memory depth or something like that. It's massive. Yeah. Oh, it's just incredible.
We better not get you too excited on here, huh? And we lost Dave.
I get excited about this stuff. Yeah. I've had really expensive gear before that I've got from previous companies or I've scored on eBay really cheaply as a bargain.
Yeah.
And then I'm going, well, yeah, you know, look, I've got this scope or I've got this bit of gear that I know is worth X thousands of dollars or even in some cases tens of thousands of dollars.
Wow.
And I'm going, well, if I had that cash, would I buy this bit of gear?
Yeah.
And the answer is always no. Yeah.
Right.
So if I answer myself no, then I sell it. So there's no point keeping it.
You know, I heard a really great thing the other day. Basically, it was recording stuff when I was getting the H1, you know, someone was talking to me about it, and his philosophy was go as cheap as you can until you can't use it anymore. And most of the time you're going to use it for the base functionality. And then eventually you're going to realize, okay, there's definitely limitation here. And right now I need a new scope. And as long as it's, hopefully it's not an emergency situation or, you know, new scope, new DMM, whatever it is, you know, until you get to that point, you're just drooling and getting marketing hype, you know, and that's taking control of you. So I really like that rule, and I've been using that for purchases lately, because especially test equipment, you know.
Yeah, I always buy the cheapest thing. Yeah, I'm perfectly capable. I could, if I wanted to, I could go out and buy a $5,000 oscilloscope for my lab, right? But I think I'd be an absolute dickhead to do that, because I know I would never use it.
Not the person you bought it from. They'd love you.
No, yeah, they would love me.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, I can get by with just almost 99% of the stuff I do get by with my, you know, 100 megahertz Rigol, my $400 Rigol.
Yeah.
Cheap as chips, does 99% of the work. And if I need the extra capability, I could go out and rent. You know, you can rent these high-end scopes for $200 a day or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's cheaper to go out and do that. You could rent it 5 times or 10 times before, you know, you actually pay for that thing.
Yeah.
So
that's a good point.
Yeah.
I like it.
I don't get it. So anyway, I'm not sure what he's done. I haven't kept up to date with that. But he was thinking about putting like a crazy price on eBay. And if he got it, then he was going to sell it. But I don't know.
Not the worst idea.
Anyway. But.
Anyways, I wanted to get back to this list of places online, just because some of them seem really cool. The one I was really looking at, actually, I found out from Lemore Fried's site, LadyAda.net. That's actually how I found it at first, and it's electronicsexpress.com or LEXP.com. And I was on there, and the reason I was asking around on Twitter is because it just looks like this really horrible interface. Like, it looks like it's like out of the 90s. I thought the site might be dead. I was actually checking, you know, when it was last updated and stuff. And it is active. And I did find someone actually from Cleveland who told me that they bought from it. And so I was asking, his name's Sam. He's from the local hackerspace. And but he gave me a couple other lists too, because, you know, I've just been looking around. So other ones he listed were Goldmine Electric or Electronic Goldmine.
Stuff from them.
You have, yeah.
Yep.
And then All Electronics.
They've got lots of surplus. I think it's mostly surplus. I don't think a lot of it's new on Electronic Goldmine. But
Yeah. Then AllElectronics.com. I was on there today. I was talking to a coworker about that too. And that seemed like a lot of good like connectors. So if you're like making cables or if you need like AC-DC wall wart kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. FutureLec.com. God, some of these names are horrible.
FutureLec's are, I'm not going to say dodgy, but
slow.
They're... They're slow. Because they have, and they make it out that they're an Australian company. They have, you can go to futurelec.com.au and they have an office here. I'm using the quote marks.
Yeah.
Office. And it's just one guy's home address, and he doesn't actually ship anything from there. He's just like a local contact. But they make it out like it's an Australian company.
That's kind of shady.
To Australian customers, and they ship it from, where is it, Hong Kong or,
yeah.
or somewhere else. But instead of getting it next day like you do when you buy parts from Hong Kong on via eBay, they come incredibly quick. Hong Kong to Australia is like overnight.
Really? That's
just,
awesome.
Yeah. Oh, it's just incredible. Yeah. But yeah, they take 2 to 3 weeks because they pool orders together, I think. And then they're trying to save their own local shipping costs, their own internal shipping costs. So they wait until they've got 50 orders or 100 orders together and then they ship it and then they distribute it.
Right. They probably do container shipping too. You know, like the big...
Probably something like that. Yeah. And I've heard people complaining, oh, it took me 2 months to get my parts or a month. Yeah. You know, it's... But they do eventually get it. So you do get it. So they are the real deal. But yeah, don't think you're going to get it same week. I don't think anyone who gets anything same week from FutureLec.
Yeah.
So anyway,
another one was Electronic Surplus. That's actually a Cleveland one, but they have a website too. So I haven't been there yet. It's up. It's up probably half an hour from me. But BGMicro.com.
Yep. I've browsed his site.
Yeah. And he lists Altronics.com, Surplus stuff again.
Yep.
And then Triode Electronics was kind of, some of these were tube stuff, so I don't really do tubes.
Right. But, no, same here.
Yeah.
Come on, you're an analog guy. You have to do tubes?
No.
No? Jeez.
I mean,
That warm glow?
Oh, yeah, that warm analog sound.
Doesn't do anything
sound.
For
you? Oh, yeah.
No?
Yeah. Unlike the sound of 50-year-old electronics. Although some of it's nice. I mean, but the thing is, like, I have my piano, and I love, you know, that's all. It's solid state in there, but it sounds great. You know, it's using BJTs. It's still, it's warm, I'll tell you that.
Right.
Not a warm sound. I mean, it is a warm sound, too, but that's kind of the internals of the piano, too, how the mechanics work. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's...
Apparently, you can get digital DSP stuff now that tries to simulate the tube sound.
Oh,
so you get these digital systems, and you can put it into tube mode, and it gives it the warm, fuzzy.
Yeah,
they've mapped the distortion profile of a tube, and they do that in DSP to.
Some of them are really ridiculous. I've seen a guitar pedal where it's all solid state, and then they have one single tube in there, and it's basically they're using it as like an LED. I think they actually put signal through it, but it's like one tube, and it's like, come on, guys! Like, I mean, it's probably like a, you know.
It adds some distortion. That's what it does.
I mean, it's, you know.
Gives it that warm, fuzzy sound.
Yeah. I don't know. Class A amplifier, blah, blah, blah. You know, burns a ton of power. And that's, and that's about it. Enjoy.
Now, you wanted to talk about different transistor parts. Speaking of transistors.
Oh, yeah.
Like the old-fashioned, you know, the BC547, the 3904.
I never heard about this. Like the... So 3904, 3906, I wrote that wrong. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's like standard in the U.S., you know, NPN, yep. PNP. And then I was talking to someone from New Zealand that I know, and he said, no, it's all, they're totally different here.
Yep, they're BC547, 548, 2N2222 is another one, which is the equivalent.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, they're all general. Yeah, they're their standard general purpose ones here. And JCAR, the local company here I talked about, they sell like a PN100 and a PN200, which is another equivalent generic, you know. And they always advertise as being compatible with the BC547 and the 3904 and the 2N2222. And, geez, I'm out of breath just talking about it.
Yeah, I know, right?
I know.
It's weird, though, that it's like geographical, you know, like why I was looking at the... Who made the BC547 first? I thought it was ST, maybe. Was that who it was?
Oh, I couldn't tell you.
Mm.
But it's been going since before I was itching my daddy's pants. That's for... I grew up... for BC547 here in Australia was the standard, you know, NPN type, but they also did the 3904. That came along probably in the 80s, I started to see. Late 80s, I started to see the 3904, and then there was the 2N2222, and...
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the local J-Car stock all the different types as well. They do stock them if you want them. But they do have these, you know, you can buy a bag of 100 of these generic ones. And I still have, you know, a bag of a couple of 100 BC547s out there. And, and there's different types. There's 547, 548, 549 to get. Oh, don't quote me on this. Jeez, I haven't used them for decades. But, yeah, they've got slightly different characteristics.
Yeah,
and
they
were three in that range. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I clicked over to the wiki page, and they have, apparently it's European, more so it says.
Oh, right, okay.
And then the 3904 is North American, like we said, and then apparently there's a Japanese one too, the 2SC1815. I never heard of that, but...
Oh, I haven't heard of that one either. No. Yeah. Right.
That's just weird. I mean, it's cool that it's, you know, it's different geographically, you know? It's kind of like a, it's like a... evolutionary thing almost, you know, like how like there's like biodiversity if like a island is all isolated, like, you know, a really big island with funny talking people on it.
Right. Oh, this reminds me of the biggest thing, one of the big things you had on your hobbyist bookshelf when, you know, back before the internet and the communications revolution, kiddies.
Yeah.
You had your transistor substitution book.
Oh, yeah?
The transistor substitution. Yeah. Have you seen those?
Never touched one. Nope.
Hang on. I'll go to my little cupboard here. It's right next to me. Hang on. Let's take a break.
Never more than a couple feet away. Too bad you don't have it on a utility belt, Dave.
No, this could be embarrassing.
Oh, wow. He's letting all the bats
out. Transistor substitution table?
Yeah, he's letting the bats out of the cabinet right now. He's getting attacked by bats.
Back on. No, I thought I still had my transistor. I'm sure I do.
Yeah, it's probably somewhere.
I thought it was in my cupboard. It's probably upstairs in one of the up in the attic, as you guys call it up there in the US, I think. Attic,
what do you call it?
It's your, well, the roof. We just call it the roof. So it's up in the roof.
Up in the roof.
Up in the roof.
I guess
that's where we store stuff. We store stuff up in the roof. You guys store it in the attic.
That's attic, yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, the transistor substitution book. It would be like 2 inches thick or something like that. And it would list, you know, 100,000 different transistors and their substitutes.
Wow.
So
that must have been really tedious. Like, did you like highlight the ones that you usually use so you could always kind of thumb back to it?
Yeah, and you would bookmark it and stuff like that. But yeah, so if you were servicing a bit of gear and you had this weird transistor, because, you know, you would look it up in your transistor substitution book. Yeah. Oh, it's a, right. I can just use a BC547 for that. Great. Yeah.
I talk about this on my website when I was doing it, but I blew out a transistor on the Wurlitzer piano. So, like, Wurlitzer, it's like a, you know, it's an electric piano that, like, Ray Charles played, blah, blah, blah. And so I blew out the transistor, but they had, like, this internal part numbering system. I got the schematic, and then I'm like, what is this? It you know, it was internal, so I ended up finding it on some message board. Someone characterized it, thank God, but, yeah, it was horrible.
Right.
Yeah, just finding that stuff. I mean, it's, I don't know, standardization is good in that regard, for sure.
Yeah. Well, there's still websites that you can, like, you don't need the book anymore. You can go to these transistor substitution websites, and they're still, you know, everyone in the service industry will bookmark those. They'll use them every day because they're still servicing amplifiers and pianos and God knows what. So,
yep. I like it when they do that for like op amps too. I mean, it's a little less common, but, like, you know, But, like, a lot of vendors will, you know, they'll design an op amp to match or beat some other op amp. And I want them to tell me in really big letters, you know? I just want to know
which ones it beats. Well, a lot of the manufacturers, I love the manufacturers that have the cross, oh God, what's the word? The cross comparison thing to the part number cross comparison. Oh, I'm sure it's a different word. I've got having a mental block. But you can type in the competitor's part number and they will tell you which one of theirs is better or equivalent. So it's great. It's good service.
Yeah, I like that.
Mm.
So no luck on the book though, huh? Oh, well.
No luck on the book. No, I'm sure. I think it's up in the roof with, you know, I keep them in storage boxes up there. I've got my old books and magazines. All my old Electronics Australia magazines are all up there because the wife doesn't want me to keep books down here because,
too cluttered,
know.
Yeah. So before we step away from Australia, I thought I should mention I saw on the Freetronics Twitter account. They're starting to sell. At first I was like, well, where the heck would they sell Arduinos? But they're selling their 2010 board, I think, in stores soon. So it must be
J-Car and Altronics.
Yeah, that's great.
I guarantee it's J-Car and Altronics, yeah.
That's really cool.
Or, but either or both, yep.
Yeah.
But so, once again, the average punter does go into J-Car. The average punter doesn't go into Altronics. They're a bit... Well, Altronics are really into the audio side of stuff. They design their own audio amps and stuff like that. Yeah. So they're really big in the Australian audio industry. But yeah, J-Car, people do walk in off the street, but usually they're after a farting gadget or something. But having those boards in there is good because people see them and they go...
Yeah.
And especially if the staff know what they are and what they're capable of, and they've got the info to back it up. You know, they can go, hey, you can buy one of these kits for, I don't know, what is it, 30 or 40 bucks or something, or 50 bucks.
Like that,
and and they can go away and they can do really cool stuff with it. So hopefully that will encourage people to, be involved in electronics, because I'm sure they have people come in and they go, oh, how do I control my Christmas lights? You know, I want to flash my own Christmas lights to music. And they can go, well, use one of these boards and a microphone or, something like that. So,
yeah, I have to check on that.
Yeah, it's good.
One of my friends at work does that. And this year, I think he said I hope I'm not blowing any surprises, but he said he was going to do it by text message, where people could text and control the lights.
Oh, right. Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen stuff like that. You can stand out front of the house. And I think a couple of people do it here in Sydney. They actually advertise on a sign out the front of their house of their the text mobile number to text to. And you can start the sequence, or you can choose a different light sequence or something. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that. It's cool. It's cool when it's synced to music too. But I was going to ask you about... I guess it's sort of it's not really that relevant, but just do you guys know anything about Thanksgiving over there? Like, you know how we have like this huge, not a huge holiday, but like a...
No, big, Thanksgiving is a total US thing, and what it is. What is it for? What's the... the original purpose?
Like, people coming over and discovering America, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, but it was the discovery of America thing. Yeah.
Mostly it's eating turkey these days and, hanging out with family, but... Right. So I'll be doing that.
Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
When is that?
Thursday.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's just interesting because, there's always like holidays like that in a lot of countries, and we're just shutting down, Chinese New Year, right? That affects everybody now. Like, and that's a huge shutdown. But
you betcha.
We get 2-day shutdown in the US now, and effectively it's 3 because people are going to take Wednesday off probably too.
Right. Got it. Well, I was thinking about doing a live show tomorrow as well, so maybe I shouldn't because it's probably Thanksgiving. Because the last live show I did was on like July 4th or something like that, and chose the wrong date.
Today's Monday here, so you could probably do a live show tomorrow.
Oh, right. Okay. Oh, yeah, because it'd be Tuesday. That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, I might still do that. But yeah, happy Thanksgiving to all you US folk out there. I'm sure it's a big deal.
Whatever.
Right, but the answer is no. We don't have Thanksgiving here.
Well, I know.
Well, no, but we don't. Oh, we have...
Founders Day or something like that?
We have Australia Day, which is the big...
Like that.
We celebrate being Australian and, Yeah, and you get drunk and that's... And it's a, it's a day off work, so...
Yeah, all right. Yeah. All right, that's good.
that's probably the equivalent thing here, I suspect. So.
Yeah.
Yes. Everyone loves holidays. We just don't get enough holidays from work.
Yeah. So I was going to talk about some project stuff because I've been doing projects on the side. And so I ran into a scheduling problem recently. And do you ever... I mean, this is for like a contract thing I'm doing, but I got all of the timing down, right? So I'm like, all right, I think this will take this much time, this will take this much time. And we got to the end and I'm like, this is going to take 10 weeks. And it was just like the stark reality of it, just looking at it and being like, and it's stretching into, what would that be, like February? I was like,
so it stretches over Christmas time and things shut down over Christmas.
I know.
So you've got to factor all that in.
I know, right? And I've just, I've had that a couple of times. I had that a different time where I was quoting a job to somebody, excuse me, and it ended up being like, 14, 15 weeks and 10 grand of his money. And and he's like, maybe I don't want this that bad after all.
That's right. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And they're usually realistic you know, timelines, because things just take time. You've got to do them in sequence, especially if you're the only person working on the damn thing.
Yeah, well, you know? And you, even if you're not.
You can't load and test your PCB before you lay it out. There's a sequence of events that have to...
Yeah. Yeah, so
and especially when it involves a customer, when they've got to get sign off, you know, you might have to do the, you know, the general concept first. They've got to sign it off. You've got to go back and forth a few revisions, and then the schematic, you know, back and forth, and then
And that's actually another point I wanted to make too about the like so say you're going to a customer. I mean, you used to do this kind of stuff, didn't you, Dave? You said you used to do contract stuff.
Yeah,
and like, you know, when you go to them and you're like, okay, they say, okay, I want a flashlight, and I want the flashlight to have, you know, a switch on it. I want it to have light output when the switch is turned on, and I want it to use two batteries. And so you come back and you have a flashlight that looks like many other flashlights. It has a switch that, you know, is a little slidey switch. It has a, you know, a very low wattage light bulb, and it uses two batteries. And they're like, no. I wanted a push button. I wanted to output purple light, and I wanted to use 14 AAA batteries. And you're like, what?
The constant moving goalposts. That's the thing. That's it doesn't matter whether it's one person contracting you for a job, or whether it's a big company, or whether it's you're working at a big company. Those goalposts always move.
Well,
and if people don't understand that concept of the moving goalposts, it basically means the spec, the holy grail of getting a project on time and on budget is to get a firm spec up front that everyone agrees on, and that's set in concrete, and then you just go off and do it. You produce exactly what the spec says. But halfway through they'll go, oh, they'll move the goalposts, what's called moving the goalposts.
Right.
It'll be, oh, they'll change, no, I want it to be a bit faster, I want it to use less power, I want it to use D cells instead of double A's or whatever. And you often have to read that changes, oh, okay, I need a new case for that, or I need new, and it you just have to almost start again sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I think the worst thing too is that a lot of times you could even think you have a concrete thing, right? So you get 2 weeks. And then the whole time you were this is what happened to me. You know, the whole time you're talking about light output, and they're thinking, okay, it's going to be LEDs, and you're thinking, oh no, it's going to be a CFL or something like that. You know,
right?
And the whole time, you know, you're speaking the same language, but you're actually not speaking the same language.
You're
and,
not talking about the same thing. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. And so Jack Gansel writes about that a lot, and he loves talking about light requirements, and it's kind of like a managey topic. But I had never really run into it until, you know, recently. And it's just so frustrating. It's like, you know, like you're speaking the same language, but no, not really. And it's not like you and I don't speak the same language because you say weird things. But you know, like it's you know, it's difficult, man. That's why you said you don't like it anymore, right?
That's why I don't do it anymore. I just refuse. I get asked all the time, can you design me this? And I, you know, look, we'll pay you a shitload of money. No, I don't want to do it. It's too much hassle. You know, I just don't want to do it. It sucks up your life. And you end up, and if you're contracted, a lot of people will, if you want to start up your own business doing subcontract design or actual, you know, actually designing contract stuff for people, then you've often got to give a fixed price quote up front.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you go over, then you have to eat it. You know, you've got to eat the deal. So
I just
don't want to do that anymore. I gave that up a long time ago. It's just a pain in the ass. Yeah. And it's almost like doing auto routing on PCBs. It's the old analogy thing. If you want that to work, auto routing to work, you've got to put so much effort up front into specifying all the rules that, you know, it takes so much time and effort. You may as well design the product. And it's the same thing here. If you want everyone to be on the same on the same page, in the same mindset about what the final product's going to be and look like, you've got to put so much work in up front that you've already done 90% of the work.
Why not just route it the whole time, right?
Yeah. So it's almost a given that the goalposts are going to move during a project.
That's horrible.
You just have to assume it's going to happen, because in 90% of the cases it will happen.
Yeah.
That's a pain in the ass.
It is a pain in the ass. Some cases are better than others. I mean, in my case, it was just a miscommunication, you know, but man.
Right.
Yeah, I think about that. You know, like I think about starting my own business sometime, and if it, you know, I think about like, whoa, easy day.
Yeah. It sounds good in theory.
Well, I mean, I think if I was going to go full time, just do my own thing, I'd want to like try and develop a product that I came up with, right?
Exactly. That's what I want to do from now on. Yep. Yeah.
And I think that's the way to really go, because no matter what, you're always working for someone, right? You're either working for the customer or you're working for the guy that's talking to the customer, in the case of being a subcontract person. But man, mm-hmm. I don't know. I know there's a ton of stuff that's related to that I have no idea about. I don't know how to talk to customers, right? I don't.
Why the hell
do you need that?
Well, when and if I go to the blog full time, I'll need some supplementary income, and I won't do that by doing contract design work for someone else. Screw that.
You'll never do a blog again.
They'll just suck up all my time, because everyone I know who works for themselves doing subcontract design and or board layout or something like that, they just work their ass off. They don't have a life, basically. And it sucks. So what I'll do is I'll design my own products that I think, I'll find a niche market for a product and I'll design it and sell it. Then I don't answer to anyone but myself. If the project doesn't get done or if it's a month late, who cares?
Right.
And I can change my mind .
I think the tough part about that then is the sustaining, So you
got to sustain it, yeah.
So then you'll end
but
up
it's the same thing with contract design as well. You can have a contract, and as soon as it's finished, you may not get another contract design for 3 months. So you got no income for 3 months. So
yeah, true.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole idea about doing your own projects is that you slowly build up a portfolio of actual products, and you build up so that, so that you'll get continual sales of those individual products. I think Artifruit or somebody's talked about this in some lecture or speech somewhere, that once you've got start out with two or three different products, and then you can set up your own store, and then people will come back to it, and then slowly add new products in. And
That's how they started too, so that's a way to go, because then you get the foundation under you. Because I forget who was. I was reading someone's stuff online the other day. It's talking about shipping. I don't know anything about shipping.
Shipping's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, right. I mean,
it's the worst aspect of a kit business, I can assure you.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, but maybe there's a business out there for someone that loves shipping.
Well, they're called
UPS
fulfillment services. You can get a company to fulfill the orders for you. They take the orders, pack it and ship it all that sort of stuff and handle all that sort of stuff. It's a particular pain in the ass here in Australia, because every single item that gets sent overseas, you have to do a custom clearance form for. So every kit I send, every microcurrent kit or microwatch kit I send out or other stuff, I've got to fill out, I've got to handwrite these bloody customs forms, and it's just horrid.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm not sure if it's the same in the US, how bad it is over there if you want to ship overseas. But
yeah, I've never shipped overseas.
Right. Yeah. It's difficult. Most of it, 90-95% of stuff I've sent over the years, either via eBay or something else, or via my own kit business, has been overseas. And it's not fun. I dread it. I really do.
Yeah. It's too bad.
Yeah. But anyway, I'll eventually get back into the kit business, and people keep asking about the microcurrents and other stuff. I'm getting back into it. I just need the time.
Oh, yeah? So, Any updates on your secret project or anything like that?
Well, it's coming too. I've got to do my final testing, and then I'll release info on that, and I'll have a kit available. And I don't know how much to kit up for. I'll probably kit up for 100 of them, because I think it'll be reasonably popular. So,
and I know what it is, so people can bribe me if they want to know what it is. I can tell people.
Right.
I won't tell.
I'll probably show people soon what it is.
That's good to get feedback and stuff too.
Absolutely. Well, absolutely. Yeah. So, but then people always want something different, and I've already changed my own mind 3 times on this project. When you start getting feedback from other people, you've got to block all that stuff out, unless it's a really good idea, a compelling idea.
Yeah.
No, you end up starting from scratch. You're better off getting something out there first, and then turn it the next time.
And
then turn it, when you spin your board again, do an update. And, here's the updated version with, feature X or whatever. So, golden rule of doing that is just get something out there. Otherwise, you'll just end up like me, and you'll have a dozen projects that are never finished.
Yep.
So I'm surprised I get the number of projects out I do.
Yeah.
So
that's good.
It's unbelievable.
Well, hopefully you'll get to it full time. That'll be interesting hearing about that if that ever happens.
Yeah, well, that will be a big deal because I just went to the YouTube thing this weekend. Yep. This past weekend, I just got back last night, flew back in.
Yep.
By the way, I flew interstate here in Australia. I just want to rub it in for all you US people.
Oh, you didn't get groped.
I did not get sexually molested. I did not get nudie x-rayed, and I did not even get ID checked. Wow. Or explosive sniffed. Okay, I walked onto the plane, flew interstate. They didn't even ask for ID.
Wow.
That's how you do it.
You know, okay? They probably did. They probably listened to you. They're like, if he's not from here, he's too good to not have, I mean, he's just allowed through. Come on.
Right. So that's brilliant. I didn't even have to show any ID. Fantastic.
Wow. That's great.
Hop on the plane, away you go.
Lucky you. I brilliant. Am not getting on a plane this holiday. Nor any holiday in the near future. Ugh.
Well, it's just horrid, packed.
Oh, no, I mean, I'm not going anywhere that I need to get on a plane.
Okay.
I'm thankful for that. That's very good. Like, worst travel time of the year. Yuck, 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 yuck. Hey, so how about this last thing, this new segment we were talking about?
Oh, yes, go for it.
So we were thinking about Workplace of the Week. So people that wanted to...
Ooh. That's a Workplace of the Week music.
That's the best we can do for sound effects. So we need some sound effects.
Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah. So if you if you listen at work, if you have other people, if you tell someone else about us at work, and if you talk to your boss and he's like, yeah, listen at work while you're soldering, listen all together. Who cares? You know, send in pictures. Let us know where you're from. We'll highlight you on here. Projects if you're allowed to show them. And really, anything else you think is relevant, and
absolutely.
You know, if you work by yourself, that's okay too. You know, the people that are doing the contract electronics that never ever get to leave their house, that's okay too.
Uh-huh.
I was talking to John S from Arizona. He said his only, I think it was him. He said his only people that he works with were 5 Labrador Retrievers and like some other huge dog. So that's okay. Take pictures of them, send them in, and. Yeah, well, that'll be a segment. I don't know.
Absolutely. Well, I just got an email this morning. I can shout out to it's not a workplace, but it's a bunch of students. Here we go.
Oh,
it's
great.
It's the robotics class from Chatteroy, Washington.
Wow.
USA, of course. So there you go. Yeah, they said, oh, it'd be great if you can, actually mention us on the show. Well, that's
awesome.
On the blog. But I'll mention you on the radio show. So I'll have to email back and say, there you go. You got a shout out on the Amp Hour.
Yeah, that's great. So that'll be our first one.
Yeah. So they're working on robots and stuff like that. And they want to get into electronics and the actual electronics used in the robots and stuff like that. So
yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, so we'd love to hear.
Fantastic.
I mean, like, maybe next week we can hear more about like what they do too, and just kind of backstories. That's the kind of thing we want to hear. And
send in photos and stuff like that. And we want photos because then
we can
put them up. It's a radio show, people, which is great. But we want people to visit the site as well. And if there's photos there, then they've got a reason to visit.
Yeah, definitely. And leave comments too. We like that too. That's nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Rather than just leeching our content from the iTunes podcast or something
okay
like
too.
That.
Whatever.
Well, that's okay.
Listening's
too.
Okay.
Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, so how should people contact us, I guess? We should probably... Well, I'll put a page up. How about that? If people want to do that...
Yeah, absolutely.
Just I'll put a page up. It'll say, Workplace of the Week, and we'll highlight it on there. How about that?
Yep, that sounds good.
All right.
And then we can talk about it for 10 minutes. Great.
All right.
Extra material each
Free
week.
Free content. Yes. Sucker. No, I'm just kidding.
Because we've got a whole bunch of content on here that I don't think we even... Yeah, we... It's been hanging around for weeks. I don't think we've gotten to it.
We gotta kill some of it. I don't know.
How much time have we got left? Because we wasted a fair bit there with the with the little screw-up we had.
My clock says 106 we've been running, so we're at least an amp hour, probably, maybe.
Oh, we are. Okay,
oh,
so we're over.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, okay. Well, better call it quits and save all our stuff, carry it over to next week.
Oh, yeah. Dear. So if people have suggestions, too, we always like suggestions, and, thanks for listening.
Absolutely. Catch you next time.
Bye.